Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Prices have been rocketing on the commodity markets of the world. The soaring cost of food has sparked protests and riots, and oil at $125 a barrel is causing economic turmoil. Many claim these rises are justified by massively growing demand from China and India. But some are now asking if commodity markets have lost touch with reality.
It's beyond crazy. I mean, it literally is beyond crazy. And it's a lot like the high-tech mania back in 2000. The more it goes up, the more people are attracted to it.
Just like happened in property market recently.
Exactly right.
In this BBC program, we investigate the unprecedented surge in commodities, and we ask whether the same hedge funds and banks who are behind the subprime crisis could end up delivering yet another shock to the world's weakened financial system. People here in Ghana, on the bulge of the west coast of Africa, are at the sharp end of the commodity price explosion. At Auntie Maggie's tiny bread stall in the sprawling Kaneshi market in the capital city, Accra, shoppers are shocked by what they now have to pay for a loaf of bread.
Two cedis for one loaf. And what did it cost before, last year?
Last year, one Ghana cedis.
So why is the bread so much more expensive?
The flour.
It's
too much.
Yeah.
So we can't buy. The price is too high.
Two new Ghana cedis is equivalent to around $2. That's about 10% of a typical worker's weekly salary. So some people now buy bread by the slice.
Do you buy here every
day? Yes, every day. You see, this is a slice of bread I bought.
Oh, so this is just two slices of bread you bought?
Yeah. No, it's too much. Yeah. We can't afford it. Yeah. We can't afford it, but we have to eat. Yeah. That's why we've been managing it, you see.
And we beg you.
I beg you.
We need your help. We need
you.
Your help. We want you. Everything should calm down. It should reduce.
There are four big flour mills in Ghana which compete keenly on price, but all face the same problem, a huge increase in the cost of their imported wheat. Most of that has to be passed on.
Here we are, Michelle. So you've got this spreadsheet up of your sales.
At the head office of the Takoradi flour mill, Michel Ganjar, the Lebanese-born operations director, showed me what higher prices have done to sales over the past year. He's worried about the impact of high wheat prices on his firm and on his adopted country.
I don't think the price of the wheat should be like this. I think it's too high. Nobody can afford it. And the losses, we are talking about huge losses. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands. We're talking about millions. By the second quarter of the year, maybe up to $5 million losses we have. And I'm afraid to lose my job. I'm an expatriate. Maybe I have a good salary. But still, if the business is not running well for Takoradi flour mill, me too, I will lose my job. My worker will lose his job. The baker in town will lose his job. And God knows where it will finish. What is the end of it?
Takoradi Mills is owned by Armenian-born Serge Bakalian. His family started the firm in the 1970s. After a lifetime in the milling business, Serge knows all about the way the price of wheat is affected by real-world events like drought or rain. But this time, he says, prices have been pushed up way beyond anything these basic fundamental factors could justify.
Yeah, it is definitely not the right price. So wheat prices have been exaggerated.
How much?
We had to buy a shipment right now at over $800 a ton.
What do you say the price should be now?
I think half of that. I think $350 to $400, $450 would be fair.
So why is the market giving $800?
Because a few people like to speculate. I'm very upset, actually, because countries in the sub-Saharan region are actually suffering. I think it's quite disgusting, to be honest with you.
The price of wheat is beyond the control of Takoradi Mill or Ghana. It's mostly determined by events nearly 6,000 miles away on the other side of the Atlantic, at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the world's biggest market for agricultural commodities.
It's quite a market, as markets go. This is an amazing room right in front of me, about
500 traders who suddenly burst into life when the bell went, screaming and shouting at one another. And basically what they're doing is they're yelling, I want to buy, I want to buy, I want to sell, I want to sell. And the fact is that this is how prices are made.
It's an auction. If they had their hands pushed away from them, they're selling it. Hands towards them, they're buying it. And they want to get it done for their customers somewhere in the world.
Glenn Hollander is the third generation of his family to trade on the Chicago market. Most traders here deal in what are called commodity futures, contracts to buy or sell a commodity like wheat or corn at a specified future date. What's decided here is the price.
That guy is trying to sell some July corn to somebody across the pit at the current price, which is $6.21 a bushel.
That's a high price.
That's a high price.
A year ago, a bushel of corn cost just $3.70. But since then, prices here have exploded.
When you're seeing flows of over $5 billion a month, it's coming from large sources.
Richard Brock heads a well-known commodity consultancy, advising buyers and sellers on the Chicago Futures Exchange. He thinks the cause of the price surge is a wall of new money which has been flooding into commodities. Much of this new money is being channeled through a handful of so-called commodity index funds, which promise to track the value of baskets of commodities. To do that, whenever these funds get money from investors, they have to invest it into commodities. The more they get, the more they're forced to buy. Over the past year, Richard Brock says, the index funds have doubled in size to a staggering $250 billion.
They own about 20% of the U.S. corn market. They currently own a position in soft red winter wheat, which is traded in Chicago, that's over 2.6 times the crop.
What impact did that have?
Well, the wheat market hit all-time new world highs last year, 3 to 4 times the normal price of wheat. The fundamentals were important to start the bull market. And so what the funds have done is they've distorted the market signals.
The price of a commodity should respond to the fundamentals of supply and demand. And there's certainly been increased demand because of America's policy to use corn to produce the fuel substitute ethanol. But that doesn't justify the high prices, because American farmers have increased their corn yields and there's no shortage of supply. In fact, last year's corn crop was a record. So much was grown that by the year end, more than 10% of it was still in store.
This bin is the largest round bin in the world when it was built 7 years ago. It holds approximately 4 trainloads of corn.
Greg Dolbear runs a complex of huge corn silos, elevators as they're called here. Greg buys corn from local farmers and sells it by the trainload to feed cattle on ranches far south in Texas or Mexico.
We opened this door yesterday to start emptying it further than what it is, but that bulkhead's been in place for 2 years, and we just opened it up yesterday.
Wow, this is quite a store. Can we go in, or can we...
You can, but now you're going to get dirty if you wait in this corn.
Right.
But, that's two-year-old corn there.
2 years old? Why? Why so old?
Last year we only emptied it as far as you see, and then the top half we refilled with new corn. So now we're going to get rid of the two-year-old corn.
It's like a cathedral, actually. How tall is that up in there?
95 feet.
95 feet.
We call these elevators the cathedrals on the prairie.
Yeah, I can see why, because it's a massive, massive space. And there's no shortage of corn, clearly, because here it is.
Yes, we have about half the corn left that we took in last fall. Okay. So there still is plenty of corn around.
There's grain in the store. There's no shortage. Anyone can get grain. But the price still goes up.
Yes. It's a sign of the times. We know there's a lot of speculators in the market right now.
So you think that's the reason?
Oh, most definitely.
At the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, Executive Chairman Terry Duffy rejects any suggestion that the index funds have somehow pushed prices on his market too high. His market sets the prices of 80% of the entire world's grain production, and Mr. Duffy insists that these prices reflect basic economics.
It's a simple fundamental equation here of supply and demand. So to say that index funds are the reason why the price of grain is going up is absolutely ludicrous, in my opinion. You have so many different factors. You've had major crop failures around the world. You had a crop failure in Australia. You've had freezes in China. And it doesn't take much to do to change this equation dramatically.
Those reasons are true. I mean, no one's denying it. But what they're saying is the price movement is much bigger than justified by those things you point out.
Well, again, but you look at some of the best experts that we've seen. They're not saying it's index funds that are causing the prices to go up. They're citing fundamental reasons why grain is doing what it's doing today.
What people are saying is that the mechanism of that market right now to do the things you describe to the benefit of the producer, the trader, and the consumer are now being distorted by several factors.
Wait a minute, Michael. Wait a minute, Michael. Go back.
Well, it's got more volatile, for example.
But for example, you're saying the futures market should do that for all those participants. I agree. But it shouldn't be at the expense of the speculator each and every time, right? Otherwise, you're not going to have any speculators in the marketplace. So that's communism at its best, right?
Consultant Richard Brock disagrees that prices are the product of fundamental questions of supply and demand, and he's by no means alone in fearing that money from commodity index funds and from other large speculative investors like hedge funds is creating a dangerous bubble in commodity prices.
It's a lot like the high-tech mania back in 2000. The more it goes up, the more people are attracted to it. And what'll happen is the majority of people will get in at the top of the market. And my thought is we're probably getting fairly close to that because the mania is so rampant worldwide right now. It's a top news story almost every night is the commodity markets and food prices and ethanol, et cetera. You know, and once everyone knows it, the game is normally pretty close to over. The speculative bubble is going to hurt everyone long term. It'll come down a lot faster than it went up.
Some American politicians are starting to ask questions about why commodity prices are rising so fast. And with their constituents complaining about high prices in the shops, they've started holding hearings on Capitol Hill.
There's plenty of grumbling here in America about the cost of food, but that's nothing compared to this stuff. The cost of petrol. It's shot up in the last year, and it's now an unheard of $4 a gallon, enough to make fewer Americans drive gas guzzlers and more of them take public transport. But the pain petrol causes here is nothing compared to what it's doing overseas.
Back in Ghana, alongside the Kaneshi market, is a crowded bus terminal filled with the 30-seater minibuses pretty well everybody here uses to get around. Trotro buses are the backbone of Ghana's public transport system, but they're not cheap anymore because over the past year, the world oil price has doubled to a record $125 plus a barrel. In a corner of the terminal, a group of Trotro drivers were taking a break between shifts.
Can you tell me what's happened to your fares? People tell me your fares have gone high. What's happening?
They increased the fuel.
The fuel cost? How much has the fuel cost gone up?
For the diesel is 55.
5.5 CDs for 1 gallon?
1 gallon.
Okay, last year how much was it?
Last year is 48,000.
So 4.8. So it's gone up 20%, something like that.
Like that.
Please. Try to the fuel price to come down. The oil price is too high. It's too high. And we want the price to come down. We drivers, we are worried. We are worried.
Nimoy Thompson, Ghana's leading economist, says it's no surprise that the rocketing price of oil has hit the country so hard.
A gallon of petrol is about $5 now in Ghana, in a country with annual per capita income of just $500. And even that stretching it, it's just under 500. But let's
500 per capita income.
Yes.
$5 a gallon.
Yes.
So 1 gallon is 1% of the average income.
Yes. Yes, which is quite high. And then you relate that to the U.S., where the price of gallon, the average is around $4, and we are looking at per capita income of over $40,000. So that it's really a fraction. As much as they complain, it's really a fraction of per capita income.
Tiny fraction
of 1%. Tiny fraction compared to Ghana, where it's huge, over a percent. And if you multiply that by the number of gallons you have to buy, that's quite steep.
The impact on a country like Ghana is huge.
It's huge, big time.
There's little that Ghana can do about high oil prices. Far bigger forces are at work in financial markets. As with food, the price of oil has also been boosted by a flood of new money. The investment is justified, commodity champions say, pointing to that endlessly rising demand for oil from the huge populations of fast-growing China and India. But seasoned oil analyst Mike Rothman is unconvinced. He believes prices have been driven far higher than the fundamentals justify by large investors desperate for alternatives to weakened stock markets and the falling U.S. dollar.
The financial flows into energy have been pretty dramatic, and it appeared that oil had become a store of value trade as people were concerned about weakness in the greenback or general economic malaise. And normally that type of trade is done with gold.
You're worried about the currency, you buy gold.
Right. You want a piece of metal as opposed to a piece of paper. And what we saw happening instead is money managers buying oil instead of gold.
You might think the oil producers of OPEC would rejoice in the massive windfall high prices is delivering them. But last week, the Saudi Arabian oil minister publicly blamed turmoil in financial markets for high prices and denied that there was any shortage of supply.
I've been attending OPEC meetings since 1986. You know something's amiss when you have senior and, let's just say, well-positioned people in the key oil-producing countries asking you what is going on here with the oil price because it doesn't make sense to us. That's, to me, as telling as anything else. It's really quite difficult to make the case on a supply-demand basis for crude to have gone from $65 this past July to $125 recently and say it's because the oil balance became tighter. That just doesn't quite fly.
A serious future shortage of supply is precisely the argument advocates of high oil prices advance. Only high prices, they say, will produce the necessary new exploration and produce more supply. Jim Rogers, the former business partner of George Soros, predicted the rise in commodity prices back in the 1990s and now runs the world's third biggest commodity index fund. He dismisses OPEC's insistence that there's plenty of oil to meet future demands.
I know what OPEC says, but there are people who suspect that OPEC is not telling the truth. Let's put it that way. Where is all this oil that OPEC claims is out there? We'd like to see it.
They say they can deliver it anytime anybody wants it. I mean, they've endlessly made it clear they don't really understand what's going on with prices at these levels.
If they've got all this oil, why don't they sell it? Why don't they bring it to market and drive down the price?
Because they say nobody's asking for it.
Wait a minute. The market is $128 on Friday. Somebody's asking for oil. Index funds are having an effect in commodities, perhaps, because the fundamentals are right. There is no oil. There is no rice. Food inventories are the lowest they've been in 60 years.
So you're satisfied that the prices are, in fact, right?
Well, the prices are, if that's the way you want to put it, yes, the prices are right.
But the impact of index funds trading on world commodity markets is not the whole story, because a vast amount of commodity trading takes place outside the markets and beyond the control of market regulators. The so-called over-the-counter market is made up of vast numbers of one-to-one trades, effectively private bets on commodity prices, often between huge financial institutions like hedge funds and investment banks. And according to Mike Rothman, this little-known and unregulated market has been growing exponentially.
The last data point we have, which was for the middle of 2007, showed that there was about $7.1 trillion in exposure on U.S. and foreign banks' portfolios to these over-the-counter commodity derivatives.
$7.1 trillion.
If we assume that only half of those over-the-counter commodity derivative positions were in oil, that exposure equates to about 48.5 billion barrels of oil, which is roughly a year and a half of what the world actually consumes, or for people who think about inventories, about 70 times the size of the current U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
There's a vital difference between the over-the-counter market and regulated commodity exchanges like Chicago. Exchanges have strict rules requiring speculators and traders to show each and every day that they have sufficient money to cover any potential losses they might face. According to Dan Roos, an experienced commodity trader from Des Moines, Iowa, on the over-the-counter market, there are no such controls on the level of risk exposure, the amount of borrowing, or the complexity of trades. In this market, he says, anything goes.
It's not transparent. It's not regulated. you don't really know what the exposure is.
So huge potential losses could be built up there and nobody would know.
Right. I would put it similar to the subprime situation that's going on around the world right now. That was never an issue until it started to become a problem. And when one institution had a problem, then it affected another and another and another. And I think that's the same thing with the over-the-counter, because these contracts can be sold, subdivided to other entities. Also, there's just a mirage of different things that you can do with these over-the-counter contracts. I think that's the real issue. You know, you just don't know.
It would be difficult for regulators to control such a vast, informal international market, and there's little sign they plan to try. So it's pretty well impossible for them to know if nasty surprises might be lurking in the over-the-counter woodshed. But even if they are, commodity investment champion Jim Rogers is relaxed about any further shock to the financial system they might produce.
I don't find that terribly worrisome, except, you know, maybe some of the investment banks will go bankrupt or some of the commercial banks will go bankrupt if they're extending loans which are ill-conceived.
But if that happens, then you can get the same sort of subprime domino effect. You know, one bank goes bankrupt, another one can't be paid, and we have a repeat of subprime.
What's wrong with investment banks going bankrupt? What's wrong with 29-year-olds having to turn in their Maseratis?
What they say is wrong is that you get a shock to the financial system and it makes the recession a whole lot worse.
Okay, we've been having shocks to the system since the beginning of time. Once upon a time, it was in dot-com. We had huge shocks to the system with dot-com. And you know what? The world survived.
It's unlikely that many of the world's central bankers or economic policymakers would share Jim Rogers' relaxed approach to the prospect of a commodity price bust. In any case, they're all still busy dealing with the increasingly painful economic consequences of the record price boom. This is already hurting in the rich countries of the world, and as this BBC programme has shown, in countries like Ghana, it can be devastating. Back at Takoradi Flour Mill, late on a Friday afternoon, Michel Gunjar was still going through his spreadsheets, trying to work out just how much he's suffering from the price boom he doesn't understand and doesn't think is based on anything real.
I just want to show you this one. Yeah. Based on the vessel, the one we received, total profit on bread, minus.
Minus quarter of a million CDs? That's
minus
quarter of a million dollars.
$240,000.
In one month, you lost?
And this one, I mean, I won't show it to my boss today because already it's Friday. We are going for the weekend. I think I'll show it to him on Monday morning. So like this, you'll have a nice weekend.
Bad news Monday.
Bad news on Monday.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.